Welcome to the Caribbean Property Investing Podcast, where we share real-life experiences for successful Caribbean property entrepreneurs. Learn about their successes, challenges, and strategies to help you create your plan for financial freedom. Now let's get started.
Welcome to episode 7, lucky 7, of the Caribbean Property Investing Podcast. We want to thank you for joining us once again, and we want to thank you for your support over the previous episodes. Today we have an amazing guest. It's our distinct pleasure to introduce our first lady on the podcast. She's none other than senior banking executive, Ms. Chrissy Laura. And we'd like to say hello, Chrissy. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Anselm, for having me. You've done a tremendous job with this podcast, and it is a distinct pleasure to be your first female guest.
Thank you very much. As we said at the beginning of the series and the podcast, we just try to share information to help others do a better job and make fewer mistakes and better understand their property journey in a quest to their own financial freedom. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Chrissy.
So thank you again, Anselm, for having me. So my name is Chrissy Laura. Some of you may know me across the region, that is. I am a 20-year financial services executive. I've held several roles in the banking and insurance sector. Currently, I am the CEO of Scotia Insurance, and I manage a regional insurance company across 12 islands or countries within the region. It has been a journey getting here. It's been one, as you, as every single person on this podcast would be familiar with, tons of challenges, taking on a lot of good opportunities, and I am happy to be here. And I wouldn't change one bit of the journey so far.
Wow, 20 years is a long time. That's the same amount of time for me in telecoms. What would you say is probably the biggest takeaway from that 20-year career in that specific industry?
I think the biggest takeaway is that change is inevitable. It's unpredictable and it's quick. I can't tell you the number of huge evolutionary changes that have taken place in the sector throughout, with technology, with customer demands, with products, with pricing. It truly has been a tremendous shift from when we started, even 10 years into it. And looking now at it in this pandemic, COVID-19 era, this in itself is a new, something new and something we have to change and adapt to.
Anyone listening to you, if they hadn't heard that you were in the financial services industry, they would think that you're actually in telecoms or technology. Change is definitely inevitable, and it is the constant across all sectors, maybe all areas of our lives, which brings me to my favorite question, which is, what got you along your property journey? Tell us about that. How did you get started?
I think initially it would be general curiosity at the beginning. And I think me being part of my career journey, I was a mortgage officer for a bit. And of course, you intricately involved with numerous projects of various sizes and a very varied clientele. So I think from there, you know, it really allowed me to hone in on, okay, this is something I want to do. A little bit of the journey and about me is that I come from very humble beginnings. So, you know, while there was initial curiosity, I think one of the biggest issues for me was trying to figure out the how. And the how is simple, as most of you would know, is the money. You know, you may have big dreams, but I think initially it was for me, I always had interest, but it was understanding the how.
And a lot of the feedback we've gotten so far, a lot of our listeners and viewers, you know, are trying to get that golden nugget. And I keep on saying that there isn't one secret formula, but there are a few common characteristics as we go through the podcast, as we interview new people and different people from different islands and backgrounds and profession. There's a common thread that stitches them all together. And And that's my next question to you. How are you able to get over that thinking, okay, I want to do all those things. I see it. I see the good and the bad, because as a mortgage officer, I'm sure you will see successful mortgage customers and, of course, customers who through certain circumstances probably were not able to meet it. So you probably have had a better view than most of us. So how are you able to translate that desire to actuality and practicality?
I think with most things, you know, with the journey, there has to be a plan. And I think also, you know, you have to have a fair idea of what the end result should or will be. I always knew that I did not want to just own a home and it being a liability and me making mortgage payments. You know, doing these mortgage calculators, you're like, wow. I would never say that mortgages are tremendously beneficial. But you pay a lot of interest. And that's a factual statement. So that always amazed me. And understanding that in itself, the property is an appreciating asset in most cases. I wanted to always ensure that it was always an income earning initiative. So it wasn't something that, you know, every month I just put payments towards. My background in finance helped a lot. My first degree and master's is in banking and finance. And you got a really good appreciation of you know, of what assets are and what liabilities are, which it sometimes can be a little contradictory to what you've been taught growing up. You know, you get a house, you pay for it. Your children will probably end up paying for it, etc. So you get a really good understanding of what investments are, of growing your portfolio. And I really wanted to do that, even if it was, at that time, very minimal in terms of funds.
A few episodes ago, I spoke, I think it was the first episode, I spoke about being alarmed at the difference between the borrowed amount and the full amortized payment over a 20, 25-year period. I don't want, you know, it to be lost on anyone, especially my banking partners, that I was, you know, complaining about the arrangement, that I was against, you know, the terms. In as much as no one likes to pay a lot of interest, that is the price you pay literally for having access to that money when you want it. So it's at the banks are businesses. The secret is to get that asset to work for you. So you try to minimize the length of the payment so your mortgage is shorter, or you sell altogether. Now, tell us about saving for that first deposit, some of the sacrifices that had to be made, and that first real estate project.
So what I want to, I know that one of the biggest hurdles for young people who are starting off is, you know, getting that initial deposit and even just figuring out, you know, how do I start? Because you hear these stories of the end results. And I think it's so important for us who have gotten to the end to tell people that, you know, in all cases, I mean, there are some cases, you know, everything was laid out for persons. But in most cases, you know, there had to be a plan and there were sacrifices made. So that's a significant part of my journey. And thank you, Anson, for asking that question. That is something I want to share. Having devised that initial plan, and it was exactly that. It was a dream. It was a plan. You making a monthly salary like everybody else, like I said, come from very humble beginnings with bills to pay and people to take care of. It is initially looking for the best opportunities. You would have to, there's several considerations. You would have to stick with your budget. I mean, at the time it may be, and those of you, I know this is a regional podcast, so, you know, if I say certain areas, I will just give an indication of estimated, well, standard of living or class there. So, you know, if you're just starting out and you don't have a deposit, then your focus shouldn't be initially on cap estate, which is the highest per square foot cost for land on the island, all things being equal. So you would have to look at budget. You would have to be very, very realistic in terms of, you know, timing. How long will it take for me to get that deposit? So you have an idea of the total cost of the land. What you should get a good idea from your banker on, you know, what is the deposit. At that time, it was very often 10%, 5% down. And then a savings plan from there based on what you can work on. How do I get that 5% or that 10%? And to be honest with you, initially, it was even working out a plan with my lawyer friends because I couldn't pay the full legal fees. Okay, I'll pay the stamp duty and then I'll pay you the legal fees in monthly installments. So it was by no way an easy feat, but it was a necessary, you know, you had to devise the plan realistically based on your current economic situation or circumstances.
I know one thing. One of the first expense a lot of young professionals incur straight out of school or when they start working is a vehicle. And that is always a catch 22. I think it's well known that vehicles depreciate. And I think there's a saying that you lose up to 10 to 15% of a new vehicle once it rolls off the lot. And that's always a tough choice. Do I take bus for 2 years and save that car payment so I can get a deposit in my piece of land? When I have the piece of land, how long do I then have to wait for me to be able to get the small mortgage? So that first property of yours, tell us some of the specs, what you were looking to accomplish out of it. It's just a place for you to live. You did say from the beginning that you did not want just to have, you know, a house to live. Why did you, from the onset, believe in an income property, income suite?
So for the very first lot, first of all, there was some key criteria I explored. So it had to be in a developing area. And at that time, the stadium and Beau Sejou was the developing area. There were several developments in the area. Because it was fairly new, land prices were fairly reasonable at that time, like $7.750. Which made a lot of 8,000 to 9,000 square feet very attainable for a young person. So that very first lot I purchased for that range was in Beau Sejou. The intention was, though, I recognized that it was a developing area, and that was because of the significant boom in housing that was taking place. The fact that it housed the National Stadium, there were international tennis courts being built at the time, there were plans to put in international swimming pools, etc. So I recognized that the fact that it was close to the marina and close to the major hubs of the north, where there was significant hotel developments taking place. I mean, it wasn't difficult to see within a few years that the value would appreciate significantly. Again, because of financial challenges or other opportunities, what I had to do was after a few years, look at selling that lot and doing something else. And that was because it was then valued. I think I sold it for $17 a square foot. So I just flipped it and made a profit and acquired another lot in close proximity, nowhere close to that price. There was another consideration as well. And I'm, again, speaking to you from a cost-effective point of view and from a young person trying to start off point of view. The lot, if anybody's familiar with the topography, Lucia, we have fantastic views, but that comes with a very mountainous terrain. And the lot sat right on a slope, which required a retaining wall. And I can tell the viewers, when I heard the cost of the retaining wall, my very first comment to the contractor was, that's the cost of an apartment. So I will invest that money in an apartment instead. So right away, the decision was made to sell the lot, which meant that when I looked at another lot, one major factor for me was the terrain. Because now I had learned the lesson that, you know, perched on a hill involves cost. And cost reduction was something that I was interested in. So that was the journey of the very first property.
Do you know, I laugh because I think I got a crude response one time when I asked about the price of a lot which I liked, and the owner said, you want view, then pay the money for the view. And the same thing, you want view, you want to be on the hill, the excavation cost will invariably be more than flat land. And that's where you have to weigh. You know, you have to weigh the pros and cons. Will having that view give me a premium, or allow me, sorry, to charge a premium on my rental, or will allow me to charge a premium on my sales price at selling point? And all of this almost needs to be done. You know, you found out afterwards, before. So we're hoping that just by somebody seeing this podcast, we'll know that before they actually buy the lot, they need to take into consideration all of these factors, you know, especially in deciding what you want to do with it. All right. So now you are not a gunslinger, you are a landslinger. Two lots down already, which, you know, you're rolling. How do you settle on the multifamily development now?
So, you know, at that time, I think I was doing my master's, and then I recognized the need for multiple streams of income. And I thought, okay, how do I achieve this apart from the normal journey which everyone takes of a second job, and also a stream that allows me to build my portfolio, invest in something that makes sense and just will appreciate over the years. So those are major considerations for me. And that is why I decided into the multifamily. And like I said before, there was never consideration to build a house, a single unit house that did not make money. So that's where that whole idea was born. Again, it took a little while to get, while I had the initial vision, vision brings cost. And, with significant cost. And it was cost from the inception. And I can tell anybody who's listening to this, I mean, the initial cost of the drawings was intimidating at that time, you know? I probably am a huge advocate here. I attended the University of the West Indies in Mona, Jamaica. One of the best experiences of my life, I can tell you. And I remember one of my lecturers telling me that one of the primary reasons you are here is to build networks. And never have my networks worked better for me than when I was doing this project. So I had a number of architect friends that we lived in one unit in Jamaica from UTech. And yes, some of them were in Jamaica and all over the region, but I was able to give them an idea of what I wanted. They started initial drawings for me. And because, you know, that significantly reduced the cost there. So, you know, again, as a young person starting out, young university graduates, you need to take these into consideration. How can I leverage my networks to make this a little more cost effective? And that was the initial plan. I think after I got the plan approved, it probably took another couple of years to get the deposit together. To get the fees to mobilize effectively. Because again, what you don't want to do is be paying a mortgage, but you're not generating any revenue. And thereafter, I recognize that, okay, maybe I don't need to do this whole project all at once. But again, with getting a mortgage from the bank, that also has to be done very strategically. When you finish, it looks like a finished property. It looks like the building and the exterior looks finished. So what I decided to do was break it up into two parts and build a fix. At that time, I was based in Barbados, so that worked brilliantly in terms of both could be rented out because I was off island. We built the first two units, finished them, brought them to completion, did all the external infrastructural works to make the entire property look appealing with the gating and the fencing. Just a little bit of background on the property. I wanted something mid-market, very, very modern, very chic so that it appealed to young professionals, fully furnished as well, because I was looking for people coming into the island either for short-term stays or, you know, medium or long-term stays. Another consideration was that at that time, Airbnb and other hotels.com, etc., these things were booming. And I wanted to build it in such a way that I could also, you know, if any apartment was vacant, that I could leverage that market as well. So some considerations there, not to focus on one income source, but build it in such a way that, you know, there are multiple revenue streams.
So you brought up two points. And I might use that in the summary. I'm thinking, A lot of us move within the region for opportunities, while some people are more comfortable in remaining home. One of the benefits of moving is that you can perhaps earn more, earn a higher salary, different compensation package. But one of the downsides, obviously, is that you're not here. Apart from not being on island while the project is going on, what were some of the other challenges you had with that bill in particular?
Again, I'm a huge advocate for moving outside, getting outside of your comfort zone and working outside of your environment. It's tremendous exposure. I mean, exposure on every level, seeing different environments, et cetera. The benefits of it, I cannot articulate in one sentence. There were significant challenges, though, with not being home during the initial project. It was managed, and he did a fantastic job. My father started managing it. Because Barbados is very close to St. Lucia, regionally, anybody who's on air would know it typically is a 20 to 30 minute flight. Also, because my job was regional, there was a lot of flexibility allowed. But the major challenges were not so much me not being there. The major challenges, I think initially when I started this, I could not have even imagined the number of challenges. The challenges were with workers, with staying within costs, with little things that were missed, and then, you know, they had to be redone, little things missed and that have to be redone are big costs because you're breaking something down and you're rebuilding. There was also significant issues with weather. If it rained a lot today, you know, the guys couldn't plaster, or if it was, you know, for some reason, the weather cooperates when you don't need it, it seems. So I remember when we had to do a specific project, it rained for weeks and the guys couldn't do it. The issue with that as well is that these guys are gig. They work very much in the gig economy. So once, you know, they're off your job for a few weeks, they pick up another gig and you cannot just ask them to come back. So a lot of lessons learned there. I think there are lessons that in future projects will help me tremendously. But the major lessons were to stay within cost. I learned a lot about using different types of material. When you're using traditional builders, they tend to go with traditional methods. And in my conversations, again, with networks and peers, things had revolutionized somewhat over the few years. And trying to get contractors here to do things in a more economical way, but also more durable and savvy way, even with subtle differences, was a challenge.
When you said that weather did not cooperate, when you have a project and people have been paid by the day, I think I need to explain that a little more to some of our listeners. The biggest issue for me when that happens is that it starts raining, say 9, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock. You still have to pay the guys for the day. And if that happens for 5 days, you know, they work half days or quarterly, you pay them 5 full days. That's work that's not done and money you would have expended. If you have reasonable workers, they might say, okay, you know, Miss Chrissy, because they're very pleasant. Okay, Miss Chrissy, okay, boss, I'll give you an extra day. But I don't see that as the norm. That might be an exception. So tell us about overcoming those challenges and getting to the end product. Some of the things that you said that you learned. Somebody listening right now, what advice you would give them? You know, saying, okay, Miss Chrissy, I'm listening to you. You know, I'm a young lady, you know, just out of college. What advice would you have for these people looking on now?
So before we move on to the advice, Anthem, you made a very, very interesting point there as it relates to managing, you know, costs that are a little bit outside of what you projected. And it brought to mind the importance of having contingencies. So, you know, with a building project, you know, it is very unlikely that things will go 100% as you anticipated it would. And there would be these normal delays. And very often in project management, you know, you're putting little buffers for risk. And I think it's very important as well when you're building to not look at it like dollar for dollar, but there must be, you know, typically in the banking world is a 5-10% contingency added in case anything goes wrong or these kinds of things happen where you have to pay a little extra. So I just really wanted to say that for anybody starting out, that is an absolute necessity. And the reason again is the large amounts you take for a mortgage and the amortization period being so long on average, 25 to 30 years, in some cases 35, can be a source of tremendous stress. It is very intimidating and it can be extremely frustrating. And if you put these little buffers in place at the forefront, I think it can reduce stress and frustration levels significantly. I just wanted to touch on that a little bit before I move on to, my learnings and what I hope others can benefit from my learnings. One of the very first learnings for me is that initially when things started going wrong, there was tremendous stress and frustration. And I think that's one of the biggest learnings for me. I mean, it weighed on me when things weren't going right. And gradually as the project started coming along, I had to develop ways to manage the stress effectively and find solutions as opposed to complaints. So that was one of the biggest learnings for me. So even now that we're working on the top floor of this project, when things go wrong, I lean on the experts a little bit. I try to get two or three opinions, like you know, what's the best move forward, what's the most cost-effective move forward, and I go that route as opposed to sleepless nights. I can tell you that you know, that not sleeping doesn't help. That's one of the biggest learnings, to stay on budget. I know that's something people often say, and it can be something very, very hard to do. When you start building, a lot of fanciful ideas come to mind. I mean, you see a small balcony and you're like, wow, double the size of that balcony. But you have to remember that with every single square foot you put, it is additional cost and it's taking away from what you had planned it for. So it means that if you double this room or if you make this a little fancier, you increase the size of the shower or the closet, it's taking away from something else. So it is to have a very a very detailed plan and as much as possible stick to it. The third thing is to get reliable workers and as much as possible try to keep them. I went through a process of, you know, as with everything in business, you know, you meet people, some people don't show up. In some cases, you know, we had to get new workers, etc. But when you got a really good worker, you know, you recognize them and maintain that contact. That's another major learning for me. And they tend to do things faster and more effectively. And efficiently as well. Another big learning is, as you know, in terms of look at market trends again. So you may have ideas. So I have my own style and I may have ideas of what it is I want in terms of an apartment and furnishings. And it may not be what the modern market trend is. Keep things neutral. Do not skew it towards your style. For example, like bright colors, you know, an average tenant or so would probably prefer, or it may be easier in most cases to rent out something neutral. So consider that in your design and also, you know, your decor, et cetera. You know, in terms of paint, you'll see very nude colors in the background here. And that, you know, came from suggestions from people who had been in real estate for a while, an expert. So even these little things matter in terms of aesthetics and appeal. And the fourth major one is to manage the money when you're getting them in the drawdowns. So it can be very intimidating for somebody, you know, to get these large lump sums of money. Anybody who's been through the mortgage process is that you get the monies, the full mortgage disbursement, you get it in initial sums for the various stages of the project. And what happens is that when you have such large amounts of money, very often you can decide that, you know, maybe it's time to change the car. Or, you know, time to do stuff about the mortgage. That wasn't planned for. It's very, very, very important to stick to the plan as it relates to that.
I mean, I'm listening to you and I hear high level, you know, being meticulous. And perhaps that comes from, you know, your financial background. When I think of projects done, one of my greatest fears is having enough money to finish. And that's where nobody wants to be, where the drawdowns are completed and your structure is not finished. So you have mortgage payments due. If you had two apartments instead of one, both apartments may be unfinished and you can't earn, your savings are done. And that's a really real life situation. So what you just said, I think, you know, comes in very, very handy. I'm looking at the environment right now, Chrissy. Do you think that the fact that you are in financial services, you may have a better feel of what comes next or the economic horizon, you know, and that gives you an advantage maybe as a property investor?
To be honest with you, I think what COVID has done is created an equal landscape of disadvantaged people. To be honest with you, Ansem, I don't think anybody is more advantaged than the other. And that is because we operate largely in an environment where things are uncertain, unpredictable, and nothing is, there was no plan you could have put in place because you could not have anticipated this. You could have not anticipated how long it is, you know, the length of the process, and it is still very much ongoing. And the other thing is you don't know when it will end. So I think all of us are equally disadvantaged. I think, again, it comes back to a point made earlier that when you're doing these projects, because they take up such a significant amount of your money and your time, you want to do it in such a way that it allows you to shift or adjust what you had initially planned if something major happens. And an example of that is initially these apartments were built primarily to put foot on the Airbnb market. But somewhere in the back of my mind, I was like, when I was being told initially, then you need to put in minimal cupboards and furnishings, etc. I was like, no, I want to build it in such a way that if that market for some reason isn't working, then I can say I can shift to long term. And I can tell you that was tremendously beneficial for me, considering now that, you know, the Airbnb market and the short-term market is almost 100% shut down.
And finally, Ms. Laura, what would you say is the best advice you've ever received?
I think, you know, at various stages in my life, I've received some nuggets that have just transformed my life. But I would say ultimately, very young in the game, in financial services, I think working within the region, there is a very lean path that often you can, because there aren't a lot of examples, or at that time when I started off, there weren't a lot of examples of people moving outside of the country or outside of the region. And I remember, you know, very, very young in the game, a senior executive visiting from Canada. And then, you know, he was asking, what's your career plan? And I was detailing everything within St. Lucia, you know, like moving to the next one and the next one. And he said to me, the only thing I ask of you is to understand there's a big, bad world out there. And you need to explore your options outside of here. And that started a journey that led me to a number of things thereafter. And the second most important one is to just move with change. And it has been a big theme in the financial services sector and in all sectors and industries across the region and worldwide over the last few years. But I think if you have an attitude that you can adapt, I think that's the best advice that you can give to anybody. Nothing is certain right now. And I think in this COVID, in this post-pandemic environment, everybody understands that. And an attitude that I will shift I will be flexible and I will adjust.
Which brings me to my summary and pulling out some of the key points from your experience. There's change is constant. Be fluid with it. Be prepared to alter, move physically sometimes, or literally, to a different country to work, for example. Then there's a sacrifice. And that sacrifice is part of a bigger plan. So have a plan. Be willing to make the sacrifice because you want to achieve the goal that you set for yourself. And in your case, have a plan, sacrifice, but also be willing to pivot. Be willing to pivot. Be willing to shift. So, for example, be willing to change. So, for example, one lot, appreciated, you sold it. The second lot with a plan. But then when you got there, you realize that, no, the reality of this situation will mean that there will be an incremental cost. I once had a retaining wall that cost almost $40,000, $50,000 for a retaining wall, which is necessary. But in a lot of time, a lot of cases, if it's not in the original budget, that throws off your bills, your cost, your project completely. $50,000, $30,000, $10,000 US is not an insignificant amount. That can mean the difference between painting and having, you know, a concrete mortar exterior house. Use your network, which to me was so useful, because when I'm thinking of using my network of friends, you know, that I have on island, you were talking about, no. Use your network from school. Use your network from work, you know, both in and outside of St. Lucia. Even if the plans that may be done by a Jamaican architect and there are St. Lucian codes, probably he can do a version for you in AutoCAD, soft copy, and you give a local person to modify it, which would be a lot less than maybe paying the full price locally. So that was a very, very powerful contribution. And that's something that we all should keep in mind. The other one is, while in your project, without a doubt, having good workers and keeping new, fresh, quote unquote, unspoiled, unentitled workers is key. But we both know that's easier said than done. When there is a boom in your market, it's very difficult to get some of the best workers. So what I'm sure you've done and I've done is kept relationships with good people and try to almost sometimes wait for when they're available to make sure that you can use mm-hmm. them on your project. In terms of the actual build and the aesthetics of the structure, in as much as you may have a design concept, you know, try to stay as neutral as possible, both in layout, both in colors, so it appeals to the broadest audience. And maybe most important at the end or during the project, which will make or break you, is manage your costs. The example that you used was so real. When you get your last drawdown, you suddenly realize you might need 4 tires, you know, and you're going to spend it. No, in as much as you can, you shouldn't, because you need it for something else in the project. So these are just some key guidelines provided by you, Christy. We appreciate it. We want to thank you for coming on. Certainly a wealth of knowledge. And to our viewers and listeners, we want to thank you again for listening. And remember, we're available on all podcast platforms as well as all social media platforms and on our website, CaribbeanPropertyInvesting.com. Until next time, we see you for the next episode.
Congratulations and thank you for tuning in to the Caribbean's first property investing podcast. We want to help Caribbean people create wealth and achieve financial freedom through property investing. Our show provides general advice based on personal experiences and is for educational purposes only. For more information, resources, and past episodes, visit us at CaribbeanPropertyInvesting.com. Remember to click the subscribe button so you never miss a show. Let's go.